Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 79. Going to catch up and recap the first base position from the 2023 fantasy baseball season. Talk a little playoff baseball, which was pretty entertaining on a Thursday, and much, much more. You can find me on Twitter at BDNtrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at Ryan BHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how are we doing, my friend?
I'm good. I'm glad we recorded Thursday nights because I was questionable earlier this week. I had zero voice. I had no voice. When I got back from the Notre Dame USC game, and that's why I have no voice. Just awesome game, rushed the field and just shenanigans all weekend. But got back home and like tried to talk to my kids, and sometimes you try and go high pitched voice to like play with them, and it was brutal. So it's mostly back. You can probably hear a little bit still going, but 5 days later, I feel like I'm back, man.
The sultry tones are there. It sounds good. You're good. I'm glad we didn't record earlier in the week either, because I realized as you get older, hangovers take a little longer to go away. So I wasn't like hurting, but I was definitely preferring sleeping more on Monday and Tuesday than doing anything too late in the evening. Let's put it that way. Like, I was in bed before this recording time on Monday and Tuesday nights. It was just one of those deals.
You entered your 40s with a whimper.
Yeah,
because you turned 40 when, on Sunday?
Yeah, we partied on Saturday. Sunday was the actual day of birth. And we started drinking noons, tall boy noons, at about 9:30 in the morning. Played golf, went to dinner, went to the bar, got home about 1 o'clock. That's late for me. So it was a solid like 14 hours of good times in a row. So things I don't do very often these days, and it showed, because I used to be just a normal Saturday when you were younger. Now it's just like, yeah, that doesn't happen much anymore. So
we're here. Hey man, belated, bro. You kept it low key.
That's what I do. You know how I operate.
You didn't even tell me you didn't tell me you're turning 40, and B, you didn't even say it was your birthday. I just saw it on I saw it on Facebook on Sunday morning. I was like, what? And then I was like, oh, you're actually 40. Jesus.
Yeah, I know. That's a
happy birthday.
Thank you. So you want to, this is why I don't talk about it much, because A, the world of fantasy baseball analysis is becoming younger and younger by the day. And B, I even joked with the guy that I do my golf podcast with, Jesse. We've been doing the show for like 6 years now. I told him how old I turned on Sunday, and he started laughing at me because he's like 34, I think, 33, 34. I was like, yeah. Just let it go. But I'm the old man of the group, so don't worry about that. Except for you, Mike Carter. See you, buddy. No, I'm just kidding. But because he always talks, he's like 50 and old, and he tweets about it. So it's a fair joke to be made. But that's good. We're good. Life is good. And we move on to the playoffs. But what I will say real quick, for anybody that did not see Ryan's tweet on Thursday, it's first come, first serve. There's one spot left to golf at Dobson Ranch. Not free. You obviously have to pay for it, but there's one spot left. We have 15 golfers, but we have...
I don't have to pay for it.
You don't have to pay. Okay. The person that takes the 16th spot will have to pay for their round of golf, but it'll round out our four foursomes. We'll have a good time. So make sure you check out Ryan's tweet. I think that's about it. But if I left anything out, Ryan, fill them in.
No, I mean, I even added, even if you're in the Phoenix area, if not coming to first pitch, that's fine. We've got three full foursomes and then a threesome at the end. So it'd be sweet to fill that out with all 16. It's going to be a blast. It'll be 2 weeks away, man. Just freaking cannot wait. And actually, it was 100 today in Scottsdale. Remember last year we were in a rainstorm and it was brutal. It's looking like 80s so far. Yep. So
it was 100 here today. We had a 2-day heat wave come through here. It was 97 yesterday, 100 today. It's supposed to be like 74 tomorrow, and it's back to normal. But it's funny you mentioned that. When we were driving to the golf course on Saturday, I was like, you know what? It's close enough to see the long-term forecast now. So I looked it up too, and I'm like, I don't see any rain, and I see like high 70s, low 80s. I'm like, this is going to be perfect. If it stays that way, of course, but... compared to last year, we're in paradise at this point. So big fan of that. All right, little playoff recaps. When we left off last week, the DS series all wrapped up. We were talking about our LCS predictions and all that kind of fun stuff. Well, as we sit now, the Astros tied it up on Thursday night. Series is tied at 2. Rangers took the first 2 in Houston. Astros took the second 2 in Texas. Andrew Heaney, the Rangers are finding out is not the answer. And then on the flip side, National League, awesome game, game 3 in Arizona that the D-backs won in walk-off fashion to make it a 2-1 series because Philadelphia looked more than dominant in Philadelphia in their 2 games. So what are you thinking of the series so far? Because honestly, I was like, if Brandon Pfaadt can't do what Brandon Pfaadt did on Thursday, the Phillies might never lose a game this postseason. They're just that dominant right now.
Yeah, they looked pretty much unbeatable. Like, and those games were like over in the first inning. You had home runs with Schwarber and Turner and Harper throughout. But glad Arizona. Like, I still feel Arizona. They're gonna have to get a little fortunate to get through here. But yes, game 3 was freaking sweet today. Brandon Pfaadt. It's funny. Like, I think you tweeted like, what will this do to Pfaadt's ADP next year?
ADP's gonna skyrocket after this.
We were Derek Van Riper and I share a team in the XFL, which is a keeper league that we actually do the auction at First Pitch Arizona. Keepers are due tomorrow, and one of our guys on the cut line literally is Brandon Pfaadt. And don't want to say like one playoff performance pushed it over, but we're keeping him. We're keeping him.
Oh, I would have kept him anyways, unless you had some other really tough cut. Well, you guys
did. Yeah, there's like trades.
You guys built for the future, so you probably do have some tougher cuts.
Yeah, we kind of, I don't want to say tanked it, but we were playing for 24 and there's contracts and that sort of thing. But yeah, Pfaadt is in. Joe Mantiply, Virginia Tech's. Dude. Joe Mantiply is starting game 4. How about that, man?
I saw it's Joe Mantiply versus Sanchez, who is not bad towards the end of the season.
Christopher Sanchez.
Like Christopher Sanchez. Good. But I saw Joe Mantiply, I was just like, oh, we're going bullpen game in game 4. This is going to get real wild in the desert. So I got rooting for him because I like to see, you know, the D-backs have some fun, and I want to see super easy. And plus, we want 7 games, which is the reality of things because we're baseball fans. But that Phillies team in Philadelphia playing in that ballpark, I don't know many teams are going to beat them. Like, they're 6-0 this season in the playoffs at that ballpark, and it's for good reason. Like, they talk about, like, in football with the Seahawks, the 12th man, that is a 10th man. In Philadelphia, like a heavy, I'm going to get 10th, 11th, and 12th man. Like that's a deep bunch right there.
Yeah. Yep. Absolutely. And it's freaking fun to watch. It's really,
I would love to go there. That's now on the bucket list. Like, I want a playoff game in Philadelphia. Like, that's on my list of things.
Yeah.
What's your thoughts on
I said this on the pod last week, but my brother-in-law went to, he's a big Braves fan. He went to, I think, the last game of the DS up there. And he didn't get stabbed. Yeah. He lived, and he had a good time. So
good. I think it's like the thing, people are always like, oh, if you're an opposing fan, but like, you can be a fan for the other team anywhere you go. Just don't be an ass. It's very
simple. They're like, usually with these.
I've gone to Dodger Stadium, and I end up drinking and cheersing Dodger fans. Like, you can survive if you're not an ass.
Yes, and almost there. Like at the USC Notre Dame game last week, it was. Everyone was really cool with each other, and yeah, it's not just because you're wearing a different color shirt that
now the NFL might be different, but that's a whole other story. ALCS, yeah,
we don't talk about that league on this podcast.
ALCS, what are we thinking there? Because this has been a weird series. Like, Rangers look great in Houston. Houston looks good in Texas. Like, it's, I don't know, it's weird.
It's road sweet road, I guess. A lot of disappointed. Yeah. Home fans, I don't know what to make of it. It's like you said, I just want to see it go 7. Kind of pulling for the Rangers. It's like a, like to see new teams get in there, and we've seen the Astros plenty, but it's been very tight. It's been very tight. It's been interesting to see the resurgence of Christian Javier. We talk about what postseason performances might do for following year ADP. Christian Javier could be a pretty interesting case study. I think he went his first 20 and 2/3 inning, something like that, without giving up a run until his most recent start. And I think our friend and First Pitch attendee, First Pitch speaker now, Rob DiPietro, mentioned like the movement on Christian Javier's fastball looks back to what the kind of the peak Javier that we were seeing. So just some interesting takeaways there, just fantasy wise.
Yeah, it's wild how things can disappear and they can figure it out again. We'll see. I saw you like a .071 opponent's batting average against in his postseason career. Like, that's insane stuff.
That'll for play. Christian Javier.
So yeah, we'll see where that goes. I'd like to see the Rangers with as well. I just, you know, you throw that rotation, like, that's their problem when they got all those injuries. Like, Scherzer's not the same Scherzer. Obviously, they lost, you know, DeGrom and everything else, but man, their pitching, starting pitching depth really showed in game four. And having, they're bringing Jomo back in game, yeah, game four. They're bringing Jomo back for game five, and he has to be basically perfect because they need this one. They can't go back to Houston expecting two more. So we'll see how that goes. And
Ace Eovaldi is good for at least a win.
Yeah, for sure. Maybe, but hopefully that's the clinching win in game six. Let's hope that's the clincher. Yeah. We'll talk about the World Series next week because those series will be wrapped up. And haven't looked at the schedule, but we might actually have World Series games next week when we talk next. So we'll give you a little more playoff blurbs there. But here we are, 2023, first base review. And I started doing my rankings, and I just took a break because it is a wild position. When you look at the names, you look at the differences in players, and like just look at this board that Bloom put together, we're going to see a lot of that in our discussion here. So I'll let you have the floor to explain the board once again for those that maybe missed the catcher's preview.
Yeah, for those that missed the catcher preview, we're doing this each position every week, probably twice a week starting after first pitch, so starting in November, because we got a lot of positions to go through. But similar type of board, actually same exact board as last week, where I'm taking the preseason top 30 at each position and using the Razzball Player Rater to compare that preseason ADP and that preseason ranking of ADP compared to where they finished per the Razzball Player Rater in 5x5 leagues. And so those are those two middle columns, ADP rank and 2023 rank, that I'm kind of going down and looking and see like who, like, you know, Jose Abreu was the seventh first baseman off the board entering the season, finished 27th. That's another playoff takeaway that we'll probably talk about when we get to him. He's been bonkers. And then we've got the color-coded average home runs and steals, just so we can kind of quickly see which pockets of which pockets of suck we'll get to in the bottom left of our screen.
That's a rough from
CJ Cron to Jose Miranda. We'll definitely talk about that one this evening. But also just seeing like the little greens from Freddie Freeman, who had 23 steals, which just seems crazy. Cody Bellinger, 20 steals. A few more steals at the position overall. So just kind of use that color coding to kind of see where these stats came from throughout the top 30. And then at the end, we'll talk some breakout guys that weren't even drafted in the top 30, because there are definitely a few of those guys who really shot up boards in 23.
For sure. Yeah, just like initial glance, and like we'll talk about this deeper. If you took a top five first baseman, you're great. If you took a 16th or worst first baseman, you did okay. If you did anywhere in between that,
the middle.
Oof.
That's kind of that's and for different reasons, some injury like Vinny Pasquantino. Injuries, but like, man, yeah, from Vinny at ADP 95. Through, I'm going to go all the way down to, I'm going to skip Bryce Harper and Cody Bellinger because they weren't drafted as first baseman. You go all the way down to like Josh Naylor, Luis Arias at 200. You had a whole like
100 picks,
6-7 round, like outside of Christian Walker, a 6-7 round, just like dearth of production at the position. And not to say that's going to happen again this year, but it's just interesting looking back at 23. It's just like, man, if you waited on first base, like you said, Bub, and that was my strategy going into a lot of drafts, you kind of got burnt more often than not.
We're definitely gonna hit on some of these because there's one name we all loved that crashed and burned, and we have a listener question on that. But let's start at the top here, and he's always talked about on every first base show you could think of. I just want to get your 2 cents on it. It's Vladito Vlad Guerrero Jr. He was first in ADP, 12th overall, finished 10th at first base, still at 26 homers, only 5 steals, hit .264. You're expecting more batting average from Vlad. It's just one of those, you know, the plate discipline was still solid. The BABIP was down for the second straight season. But you look at, you know, the quality of contact metrics, pretty similar to recent years, nothing too crazy. just a weird deal. Like I even saw like Ben Tidd and Book of Calm and some other guys talking about X stats on Twitter on Thursday. And, you know, he had an XBA of 291. So how do we look at that for analysis? It's a guy that I've talked about till I'm blue in the face. People know my thoughts on Vlad. Like I want nothing to do with Vlad in most drafts because he goes too high for what he is. But he seemed like he underachieved, as I'm trying to say. Like he wasn't this bad. But I still don't know if he's good enough to continually be a top pick. So what's your thoughts on this Vlad season in 2023?
I have to agree with Toby, who you had on a couple weeks ago on Bench with Bubba. It's just like he picked the wrong year. Toby did, and a lot of us did, probably, to really fade Vladimir Guerrero. And that year, of course, was 2021, which to me looks like a pretty severe outlier when Vlad hit 311 with 48 home runs and, what, 134 runs plus RBI, or 234 runs plus RBI. Like, that's, I feel like Vlad, and this is weird to say, and it doesn't happen often, but, like, it seems like Vlad had his career year at age 22. I just don't see, I mean, you ran through kind of the numbers, Bubba. I just don't see, like, yeah, the BABIP could come up a little bit, but a lot of ground balls, even the raw power is just kind of, I don't want to say tanked, but it's not, when you're comparing Vlad to Matt Olson, Pete Alonso, Paul Goldschmidt, Freddie Freeman, like that cohort of first basemen around him. I mean, I don't think I'm going out on a limb saying Vlad was a bust in 2023, given where he was. Like, he wasn't, like, just didn't totally fall flat, but man, you can't hit 264, 26 homers and five steals from a first round pick. Like, that's pretty bad. The last thing I'll just mention, remember Vlad in 2022 had that random stolen base outburst. Yeah. He had eight steals in the second half of 2022. And then we thought, oh, maybe he runs a little bit more. New manager in Toronto, new rules in 2023. It was just interesting to see that stolen base total go down from eight in the second half of 2022 to just five for all of this season.
Makes you wonder if there's like a leg injury we didn't know about, maybe, or yeah, this, or they were just that flukiest, or there's that flukiest stolen bases, but
or a team thing. Like, I mean, yeah. Bo Bichette didn't run really at all. That's
true. They all kind of slowed down this past year. That is something to wonder about.
Springer did steal like 25 or something like that, but still, I don't know. It was not a good year for Mr. Guerrero.
Freddie Freeman, 14th ADP, second first baseman, second finishing first baseman overall because of another player we'll talk about eventually. But Freeman hit 331. That's his fifth straight year over 300, 29 homers. And you mentioned those 23 stolen bases earlier. That stands out in a massive way because, you know, he had 13 last 2022. That was his career high before 2023. But you look at Freddie, it's like over 100 runs, over 100 RBIs. He just continually gets it done at the plate. Any thoughts on this? I don't know if there's a ton to really talk about, but he just continues to be a beast at the plate for any fantasy team. And he's getting older, but getting better. It's like a fine wine.
Yes, he is. And like getting faster as you get older. I don't know if that's actually true. I don't know if his sprint speed is up there, but like that's one of the more random stolen base spikes that I think I've ever seen. Freddie Freeman, who had 23 stolen bases the previous three seasons combined, and then in his age 33 season just decides to go out there and swipe 23 bags. He didn't have that many more steals than Vlad did last year. So I don't think we can expect 23 again next year. Like, I definitely take the under. I think it probably goes back to 12 or whatever, but honestly, it doesn't matter. You're taking Freddie Freeman. I think he's given the floor, the consistency, and yes, some steals. Like, that's a mid first round pick for me.
Yep, for sure. This is a fun one for me. Pete Alonso, he had an ADP of 20, third first baseman off the board, still finished fourth overall, even though he's hit 217 with 46 homers and four stolen bases. 217 after hitting 271 and 262. The BABIP dropped to 205 this past season. That is a tremendous drop, considering the barrel rate, the exit velocity, hard hit rate did drop as well. A lot of drops in those regards, but the power was still very, very much there for Big Meat Pete the Polar Bear. So this is a guy, obviously, we're on 2024. I'm interested in for next season as a potential bounce back, but you're still going to pay a premium. What do you think went wrong in 2023?
So like when I look at, so it, you can't just kind of start and say and end the conversation with BABIP. It was really bad, but I also look at, so what was the contact quality like and what was the trajectory? Even more importantly, what was the ground ball fly ball? And for Pete Alonso, the power was just enormous as it usually is. So it wasn't that. He's not hitting it soft. And like the fly ball rate went from 44% to 48%. Not really a big change in trajectory. So like I kind of think the strikeouts were up too. So like there is, I don't know if he goes back to like 270, but 250, something like that. I think makes a ton of sense for Alonso. And if he does that with the 46 homers again, which I think that part is repeatable, he could out homer Olson next year. I don't think his stock will drop that much. Yeah, the other, I mean, and Pete Alonso, he's like the most durable dude out there. He has 13 IL days in his entire career, 630 plus plate appearances every full season, played a full 2020 COVID season. That's a ton of volume. And I think that's, we talked about volume on the catcher episode last week, but like that's one part of Alonso's game that's a little bit underrated. It's just he doesn't miss games.
Yeah, I remember he got hurt with like a hamstring injury or something, and they were thinking he was going to be out like a month. He missed 10 days this past year.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah,
he comes back and just starts crushing it. The only thing I can look at, and again, I don't know why this would affect his BABIP a ton per se, considering the power, and you mentioned the ground ball, fly ball, all that stuff. Way, way less swing happy. Like his zone swing was down 10%. His overall swing was down 6%. His called strike was up 5%. So he was taking a ton more pitches. Now, how does that correlate to an average drop to 217 and a BABIP to 205? Maybe he's swinging a lot of two strike counts and just kind of not loving life, and he's crushing pitches earlier in the count that he likes for home runs. I don't know. But definitely something. And I'd love, like, we could go way deeper on things, but I'm curious to see how many like fly ball outs he was getting compared to usual. If his fly ball rate's that high, because it means he, like a spray chart, does he like warning track power? Do you have X home runs like 55 or something? Like the Rowdy Tellez stuff that we were all hoping would bounce back this past year. Things along those lines with Big Meat Pete. Like I'm not overly worried about looking when I look at it as under the hood per se for Big Meat Pete. Goldie did Goldie things. I don't have a ton on him. Like he's kind of slowing down, which you'd expect from a man of his age. 268, 25, and 11. But do you have a ton on Goldie? Still finished eighth at first base.
Yep, still finished eighth. Didn't kill you where you took Goldie. No one was expecting a repeat of 2022, and you got fine numbers. So no biggie and nothing. He's just one of those guys you kind of know what you're getting. So
now here we go. Big Matt Olson. This was a heck of a season. He had an ADP of 45, fifth first baseman off the board, finished first overall, hitting 283 with 54 bombs and a stolen base, drove in 139, scored 127. Like just video game numbers from Matt Olson. You mentioned plate appearances, 720. He's got three straight years of some pretty quality plate appearance numbers as well for Big Matt Olson. If we're looking at those things, an amazing year, a year we expect probably some regression for, but as a whole, just beastly numbers that I was wondering if you have any takes on this, because it was insane.
Just like the perfect storm of playing every day in that historically good lineup. Finished, so top first baseman overall, finished number two in all of baseball on the player rater behind, of course, Ronald Acuna. Just a monster season. Yes, like for next year, different conversation, but like it is a team build thing. Like you're not getting any stolen bases from Matt Olson, but like you're getting four categories that maybe three and a half. I don't know. He hits 280 again, but you're getting three and a half categories that are just freaking monster. And that's huge. Just kind of know what you're building around that. Because after like really, I mean, there's a handful of first basemen that actually steal. We'll talk through a few of them later on in the episode, but yeah, just know if you're getting Olson, you gotta get bags elsewhere.
You gotta get bags elsewhere. And that'll be a theme at first base as we've left the main stolen base culprits here. There are a few later, but those are the main ones. Now is where stuff hits the fan. Vinny Pascantino, sixth first baseman off the board, finished 69th. not so nice. 247 average, 9 homers, 0 steals, but he had the shoulder surgery, put him out for the season, expected to be back next year. Shoulder surgeries are not exciting, but when you get him on a 15 turn and a 15 team DC, that's kind of enticing to me.
I was wondering if you were going to bring that one up. I think you're still sore from the backflips you were doing when you picked them.
I kept wanting to pick him for a while. I kept falling, so I just snagged him. I still think there's a lot to like here from the kid. It's just, I think it's the surgery he should have before, because when he injured the shoulder the first time, they mentioned it's like, oh, he's had this injury before. Like, it's this amount of time, he'll be back. Maybe he just needed to get, you know, under the knife, fix this thing. I don't know if we have a ton to say about him because he got hurt, but it did not end his plan for Big Vinny P.
More of the same from his rookie year. Like, yeah, the batting average was down 50 points, hit 295. Vinny's rookie year in 247 this season, but a lot of BABIP there. The contact, I'm in forecaster mode. The strikeout rate, I'll go to more standard metrics. The strikeout rate was just as elite. The plate skills are just as elite. Vinny P will be fine. I really don't think he should be falling much past like pick 100. If he was 95 last year, it's the same guy. Yep. So
what'll happen is he'll be going low because people either A, forget about him, or B, are worried about the injury. Then his first spring training home run, it'll all start coming back. That's what, at least that's my thought. So he's one of the guys I feel like if you're doing early drafting, enjoy it while you can type stuff, because he'll be back to like what Ryan said, kind of what we saw last season. I'm just going to throw out some names and say if you have any thoughts. Jose Abreu, horrific start to the season, still finished with 18 home runs, hit 237, finished 27th first baseman off the board. Any thoughts there? Because you did mention something about his postseason at one point.
Postseasons look great. Did you know, Bubba, Jose Abreu, for as bad as he was, forever, took from forever his first home run, you know how many RBI he had this year?
No, just what do you got?
90. He had 90 RBI this year.
That's pretty impressive for considering season went.
Yeah, just interesting. So that's my only fact with Abreu. I think I definitely bombed on him this year, and it was really bad for the first half. But he's salvaging things and looking very strong as we go deep into October.
An interesting one for me is Nathaniel Lowe, 8th first baseman off the board. Finished 19th, 262 with 17 homers and a stolen base. You know, in 2022, he had 27 homers, hit 302. He's walked more this past season, but struck out the same as he did in 2022. That's just a massive drop off for a guy that people had high expectations for. Quality contact metrics dropped, barrel rate dropped over 3% as well. So, any thoughts on Nathaniel Lowe this past season? Because, like you mentioned with Matt Olson, perfect storm, perfect lineup. Rangers lineup didn't suck either, but Nathaniel Lowe couldn't figure it out there.
Yeah, which is kind of one of the dim spots in an otherwise really, really good lineup. This is kind of the start of the suck. I took Lowe in my main event, and I mean he was one of those set and forget guys just because he is playing every day, and you think at some point it turns it around, but at the end of the day, like 262, 17 homers, that's not much from a pretty much top 100 pick.
Yeah, it was rough. So, well, you know, he might be one of those guys. I can already see it now. We'll talk about as a potential quote unquote value per se in drafts, because he will fall, and we know what the potential is that's there. And if he even falls like 75 picks, 262 and 17 at corner infield is not the worst thing after all. So it gets interesting looking at a guy like Nathaniel Lowe, who I think is better than what we saw this past season. Christian Walker, now this is a fun one. ADP of nine, he's the 9th first baseman on the board, pick 136, finished 5th overall. He hit 258 with 33 homers and 11 stolen bases. By far the most stolen bases of his career. He had 8 back in 2019. That's back-to-back seasons with over 30 home runs. Back-to-back seasons striking out less than 20%. And his average up to 258, which is close to his career high was 271 in the COVID year. So Christian Walker, outside of a really rough 2021, has been pretty dang good for quite a while. And I think we might have to overpay if we want him in 2024.
Yep. And one of my L's for sure. I think if we go back to first base preview before the season, I think I was like on a lot of the first basemen in this tier, starting with Jose Abreu, and I was off of Christian Walker. Need to look at that and kind of figure out why. I just didn't think like last 2022, I was like 31 years old with that breakout season. I don't think I paid enough attention to actually, this goes back to what you were just saying, is like how good he was even before that. And so just definitely did not expect last year's breakout, and then he one-ups it in 2023. Like that's in an age 32 season. That's fascinating and pretty much supported by the underlying skills, which is even better.
And I think like I got like Walker. It's going to happen to Nathaniel Lowe here now. Some of these other guys, we don't always have the time to do it, but it's worth looking back on because a lot of us just use projections to kind of get us going with what our thoughts are and, you know, putting them into whatever sheets you guys use. And I'm not saying you per se, but the crowd at large.
Attacked. And a lot of those, attacked.
No, I'm just saying, because a lot of those use like 3-year averages. So if you, like last year, they throw in his 2021 to Walker's and it would weight it down pretty good. Especially then, even if you throw the COVID 2020 into that mix too, it gets real murky real quick. So I think it's just something I've talked about and others have too, that this is like the first 2024 season where we've had a real 2023. We expect the ball to be the same. We know the rule chain. Like we have a normal season to go off of, which we haven't had in a while. And if we can use that to kind of parse together previous production, I don't know. It's just, you know, we don't all have time to do all that stuff, but I think if we use strictly projections, like Ben and I talked about it on a recent bench with Bubba, they're great for many reasons, but it shouldn't always be the end all be all type stuff. But they just something to think about, because there are outliers like a Christian Walker.
Just one last point. It was just like I don't think anyone saw. It's kind of similar with Freddie Freeman, that stolen base spike coming. Like what the hell? So it's just interesting, like, was it new rule base? Was it something else? It's just like, did the new rules affect certain guys and didn't affect other guys as much? I'm writing an article in the Forecaster about the stolen bases. So I'm just kind of diving into that. But that's something where it's like, man, to go from 1 to 2 steals last few years to 11, like, did not.
It feels like a guy like Walker might have benefited from his team running more with Carroll and Marte and other guys. Could be totally wrong. Just like literally just pulling that one from the hip right now. So because like you mentioned Vlad, you know, the Jays felt like they ran less as a team overall. So it could just be a philosophy plus new rules, a whole lot of ways. Like, curious to see what your article comes out with. That'll be interesting. CJ Crum
gave me an idea for one. So
see, there you go.
I'm writing it down.
CJ Crum, this was a messy year. Like he didn't play good, period. Hurt with the back injury pretty much all season. I'm just kind of notching it up to he's not as great as we once thought he was, especially not in Coors Field anymore. But at the same time, the injury was pretty devastating to him. Like playing with a back injury and trying to be a power hitter, two things that don't work really well together. So I'm trying to kind of grain of salt with CJ Crum, but in the end, it was a horrific season.
Yeah, man, really was. And I think the back, like, I mean, you covered it. Just bothered him all year, and I do think that is a takeaway. It's not just like fade everyone that has a back injury, but the stuff doesn't go away that easily. And obviously with CJ Crum, I think even when he was playing, because there is some skill here lurking, although he is kind of getting up there now, so maybe it's just kind of degrading. But be very because Crum like came back a couple times and then went back on the IL, and just like be very skeptical of, even if news is good on a back injury, it's just like, and in this case, like, should have cut bait much earlier in the season than I did with Crum on a lot of teams. So yeah, to finish the 54th overall first baseman from a top 10 round pick is pretty terrible.
It's pretty rough stuff there for Mr. CJ Crum. Andrew Vaughn, this is one that I'm gonna dig into this offseason a ton, so maybe let's just spend some time here in discussion, because we're going to talk Torkelson later, and I thought Vaughn and Torkelson shared a lot of similarities, being former top picks, you know, struggling out the gate, see where it goes. Well, we'll start here with Vaughn. Vaughn was the 147th overall pick, 11th first baseman, still finished 23rd. So like he didn't destroy you, But 258, 21 homers, zero steals. The steals kind of stand out a bit there for you. Took him ADP-wise. But the dude played a full season. You know, didn't crush you in strikeouts. Didn't do a ton in the counting stats. It's just a weird overall look when you look at Chrome, because the quality of contact, not bad. So what are your thoughts when you look, before I just blabber off every stat on the board here, but like, he's a guy where you see certain gains and you're like, okay, that makes sense. And you see other parts and you're like, well, that's weird. So what's your thoughts on Andrew Vaughn here, who I feel is like, I might, this is a biasy thing. I feel he's a much better player than this.
I think you're overrating him personally.
It can be a bias. It can be a bias. That's what I'm saying.
So I'm working with Corbin Young this year on the Forecaster, and Corbin got Andrew Vaughn's box. So this is pretty fresh in my mind. We were going back and forth on it the other night. And I feel like Andrew Vaughn is like that old boring veteran. You just know what you're going to get from him, except he's 25 years old and a top three overall pick. And exactly. So it's just like the profile that we've seen in the majors doesn't match what we would expect someone of Vaughn's pedigree, age, whatever, to produce. But like, I just have not seen anything at the major league level. I'm not saying he's been bad. I mean, this is solid production, 20 home runs and like a 270 batting average over the last two seasons combined. But I just don't see any like signs of growth from the underlying skills. I don't see any signs of like Andrew Vaughn falling back either. So it's just weird to think of like a top three pick as someone who's just kind of like old, reliable. And maybe I'm wrong on that, but like Vaughn has not shown us really anything to kind of veer from expecting pretty much the same thing from him next year. If you just look at the skills, and maybe it clicks like in an age 26 season with experience, but we now have 1,200 plate appearances of Andrew Vaughn at the majors, and it's just kind of like average. So,
yeah, that's why I'm very, very, I don't know, torn on what the heck Andrew Vaughn's doing. Because like I said, I feel like he's better than this. He's obviously proved it three straight seasons. This is kind of who he is. Maybe he's the next Vlad Guerrero Jr. Just doesn't get drafted like he does. Like, it's just there's a feel like you expect him to be more than he is. He's not doing it. I don't know if he'll ever have that Vlad breakout season. So I'm curious to see the ADP at least, because I'll probably get. And the weird thing is, I don't have any shares of Andrew Vaughn. I just feel like he's a better player than this. And
that's interesting. Because you're always pretty high. And I do wonder too, like how much the White Sox shit show.
That's what I'm trying to think. Like, for a young kid,
to be around just the things we've heard about the White Sox and that whole culture. This season, like that obviously probably didn't help. I mean, I don't know if that changes next year, but
sadly, I don't think the White Sox culture is changing anytime soon. They can bring in new managers all they want, but the people in the big seats up top, that's all that's going to matter right about now.
Hey, so they've got advisor Uncle Tone. So
as long as drunken Uncle Tony's there, we're in trouble. Good. Ryan Mountcastle didn't. Not bad. Rizzo got hurt.
Here we go. In memoriam. Last week it was a William Contreras celebration speech. Here's your here's your what's the thing they say at funerals? Jeez.
Eulogy.
Your eulogy.
Yes.
Here we go.
ADP 160, 14th first baseman off the board. Somehow still finished 60th. I could have put money on less, but maybe they only rated out 60 first
baseman. I mean, how many first basemen are there?
Well, Miranda's 85th, so
that's true.
So 60 actually makes me feel like, wow, better I thought. Rowdy Tellez hit 215, 13 home runs and zero stolen bases. This is one that, at least I wasn't alone on this, I'll say that much. I didn't sink the ship by myself, but man, this was one. Going into last season, you look at every possible underlying number, and you're like, okay, he's so much better than what he was in 2022. And, you know, in 2022, if my page will load here. Sorry, I have tears from the eulogy. He hit 219, but still hit the 35 bombs. The strikeout rate dropped. All these great things. Ben Tidd's got a great question that I appreciate. Like, the hard hit rates and barrel rates are great. This past year, though, And he only played 106 games because of the injury. He had 215 with 13 homers, as we mentioned. Barrel rate dropped from 12.9 to 8.7. Hard hit 45.7 to 40. X stats, you still love him like they always have, at least average-wise, not power-wise this time, which is interesting. But, man, it was a brutal season for Mr. Rowdy Tellez. And I still believe there's a ton of pop in that bat. I just don't know. Like, we could do Ben's question now if we want, or we can save it for later.
Yeah, we might as well.
Yeah, let me call up Ben's question, because it kind of goes in with what I want to talk about here when it comes to where's Ben's question? There it is. Okay, well, he's got two questions. Well, the first one now. Ben Tidd at Breaking Ben _T says, how much of Rowdy's struggles do you think can be tied for his forearm injury? The one we didn't even really know about till the last minute, which made total sense. In April, he had 8 home runs with a 917 OPS, which is very good. So it seems like he was on pace to return the value Bubba, myself, and others expected. Yeah, I was starting to do like quasi-victory laps in my brain, thinking, oh, man, he's got 8 home runs in April. Like, correlate that out, blah, blah, blah. That's close to 50 bombs. Like, I think one of my hot takes, one of my bold predictions, he hits over 50 home runs this season. I was like, he's on pace. We're doing things here. And then the forearm injury, which when they finally put him on the IL, they said he'd been dealing with for weeks. And it almost correlated to the time frame Ben mentioned, because he's much smarter than I am, because he went to college. And he broke it down, like the calendar and all that good stuff. So it makes sense. And then he came back and he kind of platooned and it wasn't great. I'm curious, will I buy back in if the price is right? Probably, just because I think there is so much power there. And one thing we've talked about on so many shows, and other shows have too, is power, finding power. And Rowdy Tellez brings that. There are other issues. But to finalize my eulogy here, it was a horrible, horrible season that I even had to drop my poor man on many, many, or if not all teams this season. It was a rough one. So poor went out for Rowdy. But I'm still rooting for the kid. And I call him a kid because he's only 28. And as you know, this elder over here, he's a kid to me. So I'm rooting for Rowdy, but it was a horrific season.
I mean, Justin Turner is still a kid to you. He's 39, man. He's older than me, younger than you. So,
ouch. Here we go.
Now, let's see. Yeah, Rowdy. So, Brian Rudd just wrote his forecaster box, and I'm working with him. And he picked up on the same thing about the forearm. And Brian mentioned in the box that 6-week home run drought before the IL stint. And it just really makes us wonder if he's been hurting for a while before they actually did the IL, and that kind of stuff happens. So like, I think the power is there. The power is going to rebound, but I don't think Rowdy's out of the woods. Like, I think the dude might hit 220 again. Like, so I don't know.
He's Adam Dunn for the rest of his career. He's Adam Dunn.
Yeah. Like, yeah. And that's tough. That's tough to get no steals and a bad batting average. And I don't know, really, even if like there's some playing time risk against lefties where like, will the runs and RBI total be there? Most confident in the power returning, but there's just a lot of other, I think, issues I have with Rowdy, unfortunately. But the price will be cheap.
So yeah, that's where it's that. Interesting. And like for a guy like myself that plays in 12-team OCs with the price right, it's like worth a later round target to me. If he stinks right out the gate, drop him, move on. But if somehow he's healthy and do, like, I don't know, that's where I'm torn on him. Like at a 15, that's a risky as heck pick. Very, very risky pick. And in 10s and less, if you play like Yahoo and ESPN 10s, he probably doesn't even get drafted, honestly. He probably is on the waiver wire. So that's why where my brain's at, it's like a 12 OC shooting for the moon overall type thing. He's interesting if he's like past round 20, which I think he'll be past round 20 in a 12. We'll see. I think he falls that much personally, but we'll see.
I mean, he hit 219 over 600 plate appearances in 2022. We kind of forget that. And then 215 this year, like that's a long time to be really bad in batting.
Right. Let's put it this way. There's been 3 DCs that have been done on the NFBC so far. He was only drafted in 2 of them. And his ADP is 570. His ADP is 576th.
All right. Well, then I'm back in.
What the hell? Yeah. At that
that's weird. Tag, not, was he taken in ours?
I don't know. I'd have to go back and look.
One of the three wasn't taken. Interesting.
Yeah, I'd have to go back and look, but he's the 61st first baseman off the board. He goes after Jonathan Aranda, Enrique Hernandez, Gabriel Arias, ahead of Tyler Soderstrom, Hunter Goodman, Jose Miranda. Those things aren't the same as a guy like Rowdy Tellez. I'm sorry.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'd take a stab then.
That's where I think we're going to get a value where he's going to be a free agent in a lot of leagues. And then it gets really interesting because the fact that he can get so hot at certain spots, and it's tough to play that game, of course. But, yeah, we'll definitely be talking more about that.
Our league of meatballs wouldn't let Rowdy fall too far. 35th round in our draft.
That's still amazing in a 15-teamer. So that's not drafted in a 12.
That's behind Ryan O'Hearn, CJ Krohn, and Lamont Wade.
I took Lamont Wade. So, yeah, interesting. All right, let's go to the second half, the back 30 here. Do we want to talk Bryce Harper? He's technically the third first baseman off the board in early drafts because he's that dang good. I just don't have a whole lot to say about the dude. He came back after his ACL injury and hit .293 with 21 bombs and 11 steals because he's Bryce Harper.
Yeah, I mean, no, not really. The 11 steals is the most surprising. Like, if he can go 20 next year, that would be just massive. But yeah, it's just going to take some getting used to seeing Bryce Harper first baseman. But and he'll go early, and he should.
Well, and the fun thing, I'm curious because it'll be a full year removed from surgery. Does he go back to the outfield because Rhys Hoskins should be back next year? Because that's a guy we're not going to talk about on this show, but we will talk about in previous shows. So eventually Rhys will be back. Like, does Rhys DH? Does he go to first base? Does Bryce gain outfield eligibility? Whole other podcast. This is what happens when my mind wanders. But the Bryce thing could be fun next year for
probably
sure.
Probably picks up outfield, I would think, at some point.
Yep. I think that'd be interesting. Ty France, I just want to bring him up because everyone kind of likes him as a corner infielder every year. 17th first baseman off the board, finished 33rd. But one reason he used to like him is he hit for a decent average with some pop. He only hit .250 this past year with only 12 home runs and one stolen base. Pretty dreadful season for Ty France, especially coming off a great Mariners season. So the team was hitting around him. He just scuffled. I don't know if you have anything worth discussing on Ty France, but he let a lot of people down that were hanging on. And he was a guy that, for a while, I'll be honest, he was like a set it and forget it guy for at least the first half of the season for me. I'm like, corner infield, cool. Like, let's roll. And it was not as good as you thought it was.
Hard contact just disappeared. Like, K-rate looked pretty normal. Trajectory was pretty normal for him. And just did not hit the ball hard. I feel like I'm just going off memory. I feel like he was hurt early in the season.
He might have been, yeah. He got hit by a ton of pitches. I know that much. A ton of pitches. He had like wrist injuries and hand injuries. He missed like two games and keep playing through stuff a lot towards the end of the season.
But the power just, he in any month he was, yeah, it was just ugly.
All right, let's talk about the 18th first baseman on the board, finished 14th overall. That's Alec Bohm of the Philadelphia Phillies. He's obviously first base and third base, but he hit .274, 20 homers, 4 stolen bases, 27 years old. This is a guy that people have been waiting to burst out for a while. I've just been anti-Alec Bohm because I just didn't know when it would ever happen. And he had a roller coaster season. It started out pretty darn good. Then he disappeared, and all the haters are back out, hand raised. And then he finished strong again because, like, the final line – not bad, .274, 20, you know, overall ADP of 181. If you look at this realm of first baseman we're talking about, you take that in a heartbeat of what you got out of him. What's your thoughts on Alec Bohm? Like, is this who he is? Do you agree with what took place this year? Do you think he's still underachieved? Because it was a great Phillies team also, as we're talking about them, you know, going to the World Series potentially.
I think the batting average is completely legit. Bohm, and remember, this is like his second full season in the majors. 2021, he didn't play a full year. 22, he did, and then this year he did as well. Cut down on the K rate and has a really nice like line drive swing. I think the BABIP for Alec Bohm is always going to be pretty good, and thus I can see him hitting like .275 again. I don't know about the 20 home runs. Like, I don't know if the pop is quite there. I think if you're drafting him, he'd pair well, even though obviously they're at the same position, but he'd pair well with like a Matt Olson or Alonzo, where like maybe you're down a little bit in average and you can pick it up here. But I trust the average more than the homers for Alec Bohm. And I don't really see like a major step forward from him. It just feels like a kind of low end first baseman, corner infielder, next year
probably 15 15 team quarter infield would be pretty solid stuff from Alec Boehm. I won't talk about all these guys, but I do want to mention like Josh Bell. We'll skip a few, but I just want to mention Josh Bell for the fact that everyone talks trash on Josh Bell. Picked as the 19th first baseman, did finish the 30th first baseman overall. Hit 247, but the 22 homers. He played great with the Marlins to finish the season. He had zero stolen bases to leave his career total at four, as he has zero stolen bases in all but two seasons, which is pretty impressive. So usually you get a better batting average than this, but the power is what he is. I just wanted to bring him up because was it a great season? No, but that the finish to the season with the Marlins was pretty interesting. Like he played pretty well. Not even then, just like the even before he got traded. Because I remember talking about this maybe on one of our shows on a Bloom board. I know I talked about him in DFS a lot because he was super cheap. But if you like his first half, second half splits, 230 in the first half, 266 in the second half, 9 homers compared to 13. Much better player in the second half of the season.
Yeah, he was just bad at the wrong time when everyone's watching in April.
Yep.
And that's why kind of the rap got out. I think I'm pretty sure we featured and talked about Bell a lot early in the year on a board when we were talking about like ground ball rate changes. Because in April, Josh Bell had a 60% ground ball rate, which is awful. Insane. Like you cannot, I mean, unless you're fast, and you mentioned Josh Bell's stolen base numbers for his career. Hitting the ball on the ground is a pretty bad thing, and to do it 60% of the time is terrible. The thing with Josh Bell is, like, we've seen this from him. We've seen bad Josh Bell, and we've seen really good Josh Bell. And sometimes bad Josh Bell is around for a year. Sometimes good Josh Bell is around for a year. I think it was 2019. Yeah, where he hit 37 homers and hit 277. Maybe happy fun ball, but, like, this is my issue with Bell. It's just you don't know when that production is going to come. And I think by the end of the year, like it kind of works out. But like if you're in head-to-head leagues, it's just like that's a tough ask because he is streaky as hell and has been throughout his career.
Yep. He was a guy that I had on a lot of my benches that I'd use sporadically based on. He was a good one to have on biweekly lineup moves. Let's put it that way. He was good on those kind of formats if you could afford the bench spot. So
yeah,
I'll say that much. Cody Bellinger, he'll be coming up in the outfield review as well. Didn't know if you want to hit on 307, 26, and 20, third first baseman on the board. But I think we talked before the show, wasn't really drafted as a first baseman. So, yep. Okay. Next, we're going to skip.
We'll do outfield with him.
Okay, we'll skip Cronenworth because the Padres did too. We'll skip Brandon Drury because he'll come up many other times. Joey Meneses hit for average, no power, so he was a flash in the pan the way I see it. Luis Arraez hit 354 with 10 homers and 3 steals. So of all those guys I just mentioned, did you care to hit on any of them? Because I love the next guy.
Brandon Drury actually showing a pulse, hitting 262 with 26 bombs. Like that's pretty impressive to me. I thought just kind of leaving Great American too. Small Park and going to the Angels. And yeah, it was a very quiet 262, 26. Like, and someone who could just plug in different positions throughout the year. That was pretty useful. Even though he did finish 21st overall at first base. I think it was fine. So that's the only one.
All right. Then we'll hit on my stud right here.
Yeah. Your boy.
And this is the guy you guys know that I'm very, I kind of keep it quiet. Don't victory laugh too often if I don't have to, but I tweeted out a GIF of Josh Naylor way early in the preseason about something like in a DC or whatever I was doing, like this ADP or whatever with the crazy haired Naylor thing. Like I was on this train out the gate, and Josh Naylor was the 25th first baseman off the board, finished 16th overall in an ADP of 216. That's a return. He hit 308 with 17 homers and 10 stolen bases. The homers, I think, would have been more if he didn't get hurt, let's put it that way. But he still played in 121 games, power speed, average. He's not this, I'll admit, he's not a 308 guy. But he lowered his strikeout rate to 13.7. That's very impressive to me. The injury kind of derailed an amazing season. But I love what we're getting from Josh Naylor. Now his ADP might be a little tougher to deal with this next season. Yeah, 133 will be a little different, but he was a great return. Like we talked about early on, top five first baseman, back top 30. Josh Naylor hits that top 30 in a big way.
And hit pretty well against lefties overall too. So like maybe he graduates from that platoon role. I'm just curious. I don't know why he ran so much. Like the success rate was like 77%, which
look at the team.
It's just like whatever, but yeah, it must be the team.
Jimenez, J-Ram, his brother, they all ran like crazy.
Yeah. Yeah, no, this is impressive. And I think, I mean, if you didn't get hurt and got those 600 plate appearances, like this looks even better. So could be worth a jump in ADP, to be honest.
Yeah, could be. It might not be a Nolan Jones jump, but it could be a jump. So we got that going for us. This next guy is another one. Like this is where this back end and the guys with the honorable mentions that weren't originally top 30, they're all going to enter like the top 20. Most of them went to the top 20 in ADP. So that's why. What I mentioned earlier, I'm starting to do my ranks for first base, and it's just wonky compared to previous seasons where you're moving guys around and everything. Tristan Casas, 26th first baseman off the board at 231, finished 25th. But man, if he just had like a, I'd love to know like what the second half draft ADPs would look like, because or just second half finishing, because he was a beast, an absolute beast. The 23-year-old hit 263 with 24 homers, no steals, so that's a trend, but. Just the overall production was pure beast mode. Hit 317 in the second half with 15 bombs. Like, yeah. My God. So that's where I'm just going to leave it here and give you the rest of the floor. But what's your thoughts on Tristan Casas? Because this is a guy that for a couple of years now, the hype train's been very high, and he kind of like had a cup of coffee and didn't look great. He got comfortable about midseason, and boom goes the dynamite last year.
Oh, yeah. And I'm one who, and maybe I just can't get visions of Bobby Dalbec out of my head, but like, I just was like so sore from that disaster last season where I just didn't pay too much attention to Casas. And that's a flaw in my game that obviously has nothing to do with what he was doing. Did not realize the second half batting average over 300. That is, I knew the power was there. I didn't know that the batting average was there. I wouldn't expect it to be that high next year, but like, I mean, he improved the K rate in the second half while also hitting for a ton more power, more barrels. Like when you're 23 years old and this is your really first prolonged exposure to major league pitching, to be able to adjust and improve like that in your first full season is really freaking impressive. And yeah, playing time seemed like an issue early in the year for Casas, and that will not be a thing next year in Boston.
That disappeared completely. A couple of their second half, first half splits. Still walked 13.7% both halves, but he dropped his strikeout rate 2.5% in the second half. This is some crazy stuff. OBP went up to 414 in the second half. He had a 1.031 OPS, 300 ISO, 174 WRC plus. Did I mention his age by chance? Oh yeah, he's 23. Like, holy crap. That's pretty good stuff.
James Anderson took Casas in the ninth round of our meatball draft, which is a steal given that the first seven rounds were drafted in August, and a lot of that was before Casas really took off, or I guess he took off before that, but he didn't sustain it until or through the full season. So I would expect that ninth round ADP to go up a little bit.
Yeah, he's got a 101 ADP right now.
There you go.
It's pretty impressive. Miguel Vargas, a guy I wasn't really on a ton, finished 66th at first base at 195, seven homers, three steals into the season of the minors. Anything on him? Like I wasn't a big fan to begin with, but there were a lot of smart people that were.
We are. So I mentioned the XFL keeper cuts that we have, and we have a really nice contract on Miguel Vargas, but it's like, even in a keeper league, this was so bad. He did. So, sound like a broken record. Had his forecaster box as well. I think I have like half these guys freaking forecaster. Fractured his pinky and got hit in the thumb on his same hand early this season. Like, I just wonder how much that played a role, but that doesn't excuse like how bad Vargas was all season. This was a major step back to the point where like you take a stab on him in the end game of like a 15 teamer. And if it doesn't work, you just move on pretty quick, which is kind of crazy, given that he's so young. But you got to be able to show something in the majors in order to get, you know, reasonable draft spots.
Yes, indeed. DJ LeMahieu was next. He actually finished the year strong, but not much to talk about there. Justin Turner, 29th first baseman off the board, finished 7th at first base. Now that is called value. hit 276 with 23 homers, four stolen bases. Also had third base eligibility, of course, and maybe even a middle infield at one point. He's going to be a free agent this year, 39 years old eventually this year. So he's getting old, not quite old enough, but getting old. But what are your thoughts on Turner? This is a guy that I was actually all in on, more for third base as a later third base target. But this production, the dude, he's just a hitter, just a pure freaking hitter. And it didn't slow him down this year.
Did not. I mean, he did slow down. He had a pretty bad September, but there was a heel issue in August, and he just tried to play through it, and it was not good, which, again, isn't a total pass, given he's, you know, as old as you now. Those injuries aren't going to go away, and, like, they're going to lag and hang. Like, you're in for a rough one, Bubba. And Justin, but
trust me, I know I should be giving him tips when you wake up and everything hurts. Yeah.
But from a pure skill standpoint, yeah, I agree. I mean, he's a hitter, and the skills themselves actually show like no sign of slowing down. They will at some point, but I mean, I'm willing to go back in here, finish seventh. Like that is crazy good value for Justin Turner last year.
Almost as good as this next guy, Yandy Diaz.
Yep.
ADP of 269, 30th first baseman on the board, finished sixth at first base, sixth. 330 average, 22 homers, zero steals. Kind of slowed down as the season went on. Real quick, Ryan, before I let you take the floor on this one, because I've never been a Yandy guy. He elevated the ball this year. Congratulations. You've also shown graphs that might say something else. But maybe you know already, but I'm going to throw it out there. Do you know how old he is? Because I was shocked when I just saw it.
Yeah, I do, because I have it up. 31, but yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was like late 20s. I thought he was like 27, 28. He's a lot older than I thought, so interesting. But what are your thoughts on Yandy Diaz? Because I know this is a topic we've talked about before, and you had some graphs on it.
Super. So a couple just, yeah, so 12 of his 22 homers came in May, or through May, because he did have that kind of launch angle change, but it didn't really last the full season. Yandy Diaz's fly ball rate was actually lower than it was in 2022 than it was in 2023. So all that talk of him lofting the ball and getting more fly balls actually turned out to not be the case, despite hitting more fly balls early in the season. But like, man, you want to talk about a hitter. Yandy Diaz hit over 300 in every single month this season. Like, I'm going to go out on a limb, maybe outside of Luis Arraez. I don't even think Arraez did this. He fell apart late, I think. Yeah, like the consistency with Diaz. And the thing with Diaz, and to kind of differentiate him from Luis Arraez, is that there is pop. So even though he doesn't hit many fly balls, like, Yandy Diaz does hit the ball pretty hard. It's just on the ground a lot. So, like, I can totally see another 300-plus batting average with, like, 15 homers, maybe 20 as a ceiling. Can't see going 22 again. I think that was just, like, an early season, not fluke, but just, like, an early season barrage that that got folks really excited. And the rest of the season, he was just kind of meh from a power standpoint. But the average was there all season.
Yep, and run production should be somewhat there, at least scoring runs in that lineup. Hitting towards the top of it. A couple of breakouts that were not top 30 ADP guys. Spencer Steer, we'll talk about him more at third base, but he finished ninth overall at first base with a 395 ADP. Let's hit on Spencer Torkelson. I think we had like a side bet somewhere. I probably want at least a beer off you on this. I know that much, but
I will buy you beer anyway for Torque. I'm sure we did, because whatever the bet was, like, you,
I was all over him, and you're like, no, yeah, I remember that very clearly.
We were talking about projections, because the projections did not like Spencer Torkelson, and you were like, but this dude is like just learning how to adapt in the majors. Like, things are there, I'm seeing improvement, like, in season he's gonna go off, and
he got me. He finished 12th at the position with an ADP at 294 overall stat line, because I want to give you the splits, because that kind of will go off of what we were just talking about. He finished hitting 233 with 31 homers, 94 RBIs, 88 runs scored, and three stolen bases. I mentioned the runs and RBIs because that's Detroit, folks. Like, that's actually kind of impressive to me to have that much run production there. But the average is up from 203 last year in his debut, so I take that as a little bit of a bonus as well. But I want to mention the splits, because this is the improving thing we were discussing. First half, second half, he hit 228 in the first half, 238 in the second half, 12 homers in the first half, 19 homers in the second half. And if you go into the more advanced stats here, the strikeout rate actually went up a bit, 2% in the second half, which maybe is more aggressive because the OPS went up to 816 from 709. He had a 260 ISO and a 121 WRC plus. So there was very, very clear improvements in the second half of the season. I think it's legit, folks. I might be overreacting, but this dude is a masher. And, man, imagine him not in Detroit. That would be awesome. But that team's going to get better, too. That offense is going to get better. So there might be more to like with Torkelson. So what else do you have on Torque, who he's going to be a fun one to project out for 2024?
I mean, my biggest thing is I still like the batting average. I think it'll get better than like 230, but I don't see much more than 250 right now. Again, yeah, that could like change. Like
he's, I was doing like 245, yeah.
Yeah. But if you go 245 with 40 homers, and I think I had Torque's box, I believe it was me, in the forecaster, and I think we put an upside of 40 home runs on him and can totally see that coming to fruition next season. I mean, he got 30, and so with the second half skill support from all the barrels and all the hard contact, I could totally see that going on. I do worry a little bit about the batting average, but I'm probably nitpicking.
Fair enough. Isak Paredes was your 13th first baseman, finished with an ADP of 315. He was productive off and on. There were some really cold spots, but overall good season. Nolan Jones, 17th first baseman, the ADP of 481. And I'm going to say 17th. He only played in 106 games, and he hit 2020 with 297. I know y'all have heard me talk about him enough, so I'm not going to like go wax poetically, but to do that in 106 games, that's a 30-30 skill set, which is pretty dang impressive. And if he played a full season, he'd be a top 10 first baseman as well. So love me some Nolan Jones. Do you have any other thoughts on Nolan Jones?
No, just we were talking about him before, and it sounds like you're going to have to pay up because this shocked
that's
me.
That's the problem. Oh, yeah.
This shocked me that you're basically paying a top 50 pick for Nolan Jones. Yeah. Year. Like I thought top 100, sure, but top 50, that sounds rich. Sounds rich.
Which means I probably won't have any, unfortunately. That's the shame in it. Because I love the kid. I was cool with like 75 or something. Yeah, top 50 is going to be tricky. But then again, if you're a power speed guy, say you go and take one of those early guys we talked about, like a Pete Alonso that doesn't get steals, and you just want to double tap the corners or first base outfielder, and I can go draft 30 steals right now. Like, what's the difference between him and like a Randy Rosarena or something? That's how the mindset has to change.
The track record.
That's fair. That's fair.
Like big time. And this is Nolan Jones he only has what, 500 career?
Oh yeah. I'm not arguing the track record at all.
And like, saying, if you're thinking, it wasn't thinking really 30, like, 30 guy. Yeah. No, that's true. I like him. Yeah. What he did last year was skill supported and great. He'll be 26 next year. Like, he's kind of an older prospect, had some pedigree, but wasn't like a can't miss guy. It's just like, man, I don't know.
Yeah. It's a weird one.
Struggled with it.
And then you have Carlos Santana. He's the 18th first baseman. Jaime Candelario is 20th. I'm a big Jaime fan. And we talked Carlos Santana a few times because he actually finished at 23 bombs and hit 240. He's kind of like doing on Justin Turner. He's plugging along right now. So any thoughts on those two players who you still get at a pretty decent price on draft day, but it's just kind of a nice consistency that at least Jaime brings to the table. Santana has shown some weaknesses from time to time.
I mean, it's draft and hold season for some of us. Yeah. We'll be draft and hold season for normal people soon. But like, that is a takeaway. Like, there is, even though we see all these prospects getting called up, some doing really well, some not so much, there is value in that older dude who just plays in draft and holds. And Candelario and Santana kind of proved that this year. They were prime examples of going with volume and consistency as opposed to the next big thing.
For sure. So we'll talk more about those guys, obviously, in our previews in a couple weeks, / some of those guys will come up in other positions as well. But let's talk about some listener questions here. We'll talk about part two of Ben Tidd's question, not just the rowdy struggles. But he also says, do you think the hype around Torque is misplaced? I don't think we do. But I guess to what level is hype? But what do you think?
Yeah, I can't get a pulse on what the hype is. Like, I feel like a lot of people, myself included, were a little bit too down on Torque this season, and that's going to flip. So
Here's brought back to reality is what that is.
Yeah, I mean, so like, all right, so here you go. It's at first base right now. It's Christian Walker, 84 ADP, Spencer Steer, then Torque at 93. Would you take Torque, or would you take Christian Walker or Casas? Casas is the next first baseman. Torque is sandwiched between Christian Walker and Tristan.
I think Joe G hit me and Eric Cross up with, would you rather go Casas or Torque? And we both said, why are you the way you are? Like, that was the gift you sent. I'd probably go Casas over Torque would probably be third on that list. Christian Walker, because you're talking track record with like Nolan Jones and Randy, Walker's got the track record. We got that.
Oh, yeah.
I believe Casas' batting average is such a gigantic gap. Like, Casas isn't a 317 guy, but he's probably a 280 guy, which is a huge gap over Torque. And Casas might have just as much power. So I'll go, I might have Casas first there. That's wild. Like, this is why I tried doing my first base ranks. I had to walk away because it's so like, trying to get biases out of it. So I'd probably go Walker for the pet for the track record. Casas, Torque is probably where I'd go.
It's
tough though.
I think that's how I'd do it too.
Like, again, this, like, people probably hate this, but I've had many guests on, like Drew Forte and others. Like, if you're going for like an overall and a 12, I think I go Casas there, honestly. Out of all of them. I think he's got the ceiling of the bunch.
Yeah,
but if you want that consistency, you know what you pretty much know what you're gonna get. Walker's your dude. But that's a tough one. This is where first base, and you know what the problem is, Ryan? And again, we'll talk about it in our preview. We were talking like this last year. Well, in this range, there's like four guys we like a lot, and then we saw that red right now.
So yeah, like, then what happened to them? They all suck.
Yeah, I don't think it'll be the same this year, so we have to like somehow navigate that minefield again.
And that's kind of the tricky part with these reviews is like, it's just interesting to kind of get a pulse on what happened last year. I wouldn't say just because there was like nothing for seven rounds in the middle rounds from first base this year, that's happened again next year. It's just a thing. So I wouldn't do that as a takeaway of this, but yeah, man, some of these conversations sound awfully familiar to what we were talking about 6 months ago. And yeah, 100%. Oh, why would I could just pick one of Rizzo, Rowdy, Crone.
Just take whichever one's friends. Left.
I'll just take which one's left.
Well, didn't work out so well. Little Book of Combs coming with a gym once again for us. Okay, bear with me. Not a first base question, but what are your thoughts on guys in the first year of big deals? Attached is a list of players who signed a deal this past offseason for an AAV greater than or equal to their qualifying offer. 11 of the 15 of those drafted in the main event underperformed at end of season. Will you draft guys who get money in 2024? And he goes on to say, if you looked at the chart, the H or P rank means they were P7 or H, a pitcher hitter or whatever. Pitcher includes relief pitchers, the starting pitchers, hitters, all bats. And the values and ranks were pulled from Razzball, kind of like we do, for the end of the season. And it's kind of something we've hit on once in a while. Like, hey, first year of a deal, kind of give them a grain of salt. You usually see it work out. Doesn't work for everybody. But certain guys, like, I guess guys with really good track records, I definitely kind of go, okay, first year. Like, Lindor is a great example. First year in New York, kind of let it go. He's gotten better every year. Now, Javi Baez sucks. So that's just the way that one's going to go. So what's your thoughts on this question? Like, are you just going to avoid guys in 2024, or is it a case by case? What do you, because 11 out of 15 says something. I'll say that much.
Yeah, it does. And
there's
and
a little book of comment. Look, yeah, Ryan, come up with the goods.
The diagram. Look at this, man. He gave me a little more power here in StreamYard. And I just,
I gave Ryan access, everybody. I apologize for anything that's about to happen.
Right. Make sure I hit the right tab here. Not something else. So he kind of did the research for us, like at least for this year. I'd be very interested to see what this chart looks like that we have on the screen here showing those 11 out of 15 signees. And I'm glad that Little Book of Calm did the NA around Edwin Diaz. That's just something good to do because something out of his control. But if this is a trend, like, I don't want to say I'm not going to draft someone that just signed a big contract in a new town, new team, but I'd probably discount them if this was the trend over the last even like 2-3 seasons. So I'd be interested to see if this like 70%, basically not bust rate, but 70% not meeting their draft slot. That could be something that's actionable. Don't want to overreact too much to 1 year, but this is pretty compelling stuff.
Like the Trey Turner one, like checks out first year in Philly, but by the second half, he started getting comfortable and he started just raking again. Dansby is an interesting one. So, like, I guess maybe more so towards earlier picks. Like Trey Turner, we were all like gung ho on top, you know, 2, 3, 4 pick. Should we have moved him at least the back of the first type stuff? That's where it's tricky. But yeah, overall, he could probably do it because he's good at this stuff, but I guarantee if you look back for like the last 3 or 4 years, you get a lot of similar results.
And I wonder if you look at, so signed a big contract, but also a different team. So 2 out of the 3 guys that are green here just re-signed with the same team, Nimmo and Kershaw. So I don't know how much.
That helps a lot. That's a good point. Very good point.
Yeah, I don't know how valid that is. If you sign with the same team, you're just making more money. It'd just be interesting to see that comparison with those guys in and with them filtered out. Because two of the three with the same team.
Yeah,
Bassett was the only one.
Yeah, I usually think like it's guys that go to new teams, basically, is the way I look at it. So that's a good point as well. Only 2 of the 3 that succeeded. Same ball club. Even better.
Yep.
All right. Richard good Sands. Great as always, Little Book of Calm. Keep them coming. Richard Sands, if you're going to wait on a first baseman in a DC that you're drafting now during the fall of 2023, after pick 175-ish, who would you be considering taking? No ADPs yet, but you are the later first baseman you like. Who are the later first baseman you like? Well, funny you ask, because there are ADP. there's only a few, and it's weird. Like ours aren't even in the database yet, and you can't look at DCs. You just look at all drafts. It's still weird. I figured it out.
I think ours is counting, but maybe not.
It's not because special. Tristan Costas pick, the max is 137 right now, and we would have been way past that. So a ninth rounder, wouldn't that be past 137? I think, yeah, maybe.
No, that's ninth round because, that's 15th round.
Well, okay, then ours is in here. My bad. After 175, anybody standing out to you? Like Vinny P at 180 still checks my fancy. But I think Rhys Hoskins is one that Jenny Butler picked 2 picks before me, and she DM'd me before I could DM her. She's like, I knew you were going to take him, so I had to take him now. Like, oh, I had him circled. He's going at 205 right now, and he should be back by opening day.
Yeah, and I think that's a good early DC pick, Rhys Hoskins, because once Rhys is back in camp and looks healthy, assuming that happens, like he's not going to be going outside of the top 200. I would go Justin Turner still, like Justin Turner, super cheap. Jose Abreu super cheap at 300. That may go up with what he's doing in the postseason. But again, I'm catching myself saying the same thing that I would have said 6 months ago. Josh Bell is going 330. Rizzo, if you believe in the pre-concussion numbers, coming back, going around 300. Seems like a lot of decent options at first base after 175. Yeah. So those are a few that stood out.
Like even Ryan Noda's down here, like you kind of know what you're going to get from him. You know, Rowdy Tellez is down here, like insanely cheap. We talked about him already. The other guy I'll mention, Ryan Mountcastle at 241. He spent a lot of the season hurt. Once he got healthy again, he started playing well. So he's another guy that could be a nice little value as well. All righty. Next up on the docket here, E. Albright says, how much Costas is too much Costas for 2024? If you heard how we talked about him, if you watched the YouTube video, saw the glimmer in our eyes. I don't know if there is too much Costas to go around.
No Costas is too much Costas. Me Costas is Sue Costas.
Well, I wish I could end the pod right there. I wish I could. That was amazing. So happy. So happy. Dave Sawa, he asked, I believe this is Dave that won the NFBC 50 overall. I've always liked Bohm, and it was good to see him reach 20 homers. Is there another level for him, or was this his peak? you kind of hit on it earlier, but you're thinking this is close to it, don't you?
I think the combination of batting average and power at the same time is probably a peak. I just give much more credence in the batting average than I do the power. Still not sold on the power. And 20 homers isn't like a lot, but the power metrics are just okay. So I don't want to say it's his peak, but if I were a betting man, I'd say like 275, 15 homers.
Dave Petroziello says, I take issue with some of the guys that the play rater has ahead of our eyes. His batting average should be worth more. That's something we talk about. There's always different little rankings there. Britton Allen just says Ryan Noda with three exclamation marks. Ryan Noda was a Britton Allen and Carlos special. So that Carlos Marcano special. So
kudos to those guys. But and Ryan Noda.
And Ryan Noda for pulling. And imagine if he didn't have a screwed up jaw situation. He could have put together even a bigger season. But that'll do it, my friend. First base review in the books. It is a wild position. Like, looking back on it now makes even more sense to why the rankings were so hard to do at first base. It's going to take some time to shuffle through all that because it was a mess. But, like, I feel around half the guys that really sucked, like, okay, I could see a bounce back pretty easily. Like, there's things that looked good. The other half, they really did suck. And there's a whole slew of dudes that should go way up in the rankings. So that'll make for a fun preview pod. But final thoughts on the review of the first base position?
No, just, only thought is just still avoiding all that red where we waited. We just picked the wrong spot to go first base. And so I just need to think about, do I want to pay up for a Freddie Freeman, Pete Alonso, Matt Olson? I don't see myself doing that, but do I want to go there? Or do I want to wait or go back to that same middle round well and just hope that one year's not a trend?
Yeah, it's an interesting position to say the least. And also, not even just drafting those guys. Most of those guys we held on to for a lot of the season instead of just dropping and moving on and getting some of these dudes off the waiver. Torque was on the waiver wire. Or like some of these dudes you could have replaced them with and been okay, but they're kind of set it. Like Rizzo was probably played in leagues almost until he got his concussion revealed. Like just one of those insane situations.
I had him in labor until he was on the IL. So
yeah, so it'll be interesting to see how it all breaks out, but we'll have you covered as usual for 2024 and beyond. Next week we'll be back with the 2023 second base review. The following week we'll be in this place called First Pitch Arizona. So you got that going for us as well. Final thoughts as we head on out.
You already asked me for final thoughts, so I don't have any final thoughts.
Yeah, just checking. I didn't know if you had your first pitch thoughts. But that'll do it, folks. We'll be back with you guys next week. Check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ. The podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intrick. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 79. Catch you all next time.